Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is The Bad Batch Report. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person making some wonderful noises is Ken Nabstock. If you're listening for the first time, when we do these report shows where we discuss specific episodes of shows, I always say the such and such report. And then Ken used to do some music, but now it's just a noise of his choice. And this time I thought, I hope, I dreamed that it would be random record noises.
I hope I think of no. It is. Yes, it is. I'm so happy to have the gang back, the team back, the batch back, but I love Wrecker.
Yeah, so what was Wrecker doing when making those noises in your mind? Did you have some thoughts of what Wrecker was up to as you made those noises?
He just was presented with a bowl of Mantel mix.
There's the joy... The joy of receiving the Mantel mix, not actually eating it yet.
Yeah, it's like when I walk into your break room and you got a pink box of donuts. I go, don't mind if I do.
My wife bought some smoked mozzarella cheese, and I made some Wrecker noises last night. Anyway, we are excited to get back into this season of Bad Batch. I guess get back into the show and start fresh with season two. Of course, there was the double premiere, two episodes, kind of one story, but two episodes. So we're going to be discussing episode one, entitled Spoils of War, written by Jennifer Corbett, directed by Stuart Lee, story editor Matt Maginovitz, and then episode two, Ruins of War, written by Gina Lucida Monreal, directed by Nathaniel Villanueva, and once again, story editor Matt Maginovitz. We've started doing this, I think, really with the Clone Wars report of concentrating on who are the writers, who are the directors, once again, through the history of Star Wars animation, Clone Wars, Rebels. These are lots of familiar names with Stuart Lee, Nathaniel Villanueva. But Ken, I wanted to take a second to just highlight Matt Maginovitz. Familiar name from the Clone Wars, one of the head writers, pops up in Rebels as the story editor for the later seasons. Some of the really great stuff, individually writes some of the really great episodes. So he also wrote on the television show 24 and also wrote on, you know, that Star Wars video game some people like, Jedi Fallen Order. So just really wanted to highlight this maybe, if not unsung, undersung Star Wars creator, particularly in the animated world.
I'm glad you brought that up. We love highlighting the other name. Jennifer Corbett doing a great job. Brad Rao, all these folks. Some of his Rebel stuff is absolutely amazing. He's I've got a name that can be hard to say, that P and a Z back to back, could cause some problems for people. I was in a recording booth trying to say this gentleman's name for about an hour. And me and an engineer going on YouTube trying to find interviews from him. And there's not a lot because he's unheralded in a lot of ways. So does wonderful work.
What did you go with for the pronunciation?
We kind of stumbled into Maginovitz. Yeah.
Okay, good. Kind
of where we went to. Mike Novetz is, I wish it was that, but it's probably not.
Mick Novetz. Yeah. That's really that you're not sure how to say it. So really say it hard.
Yes.
It's the hard or the fast, Maginovitz or Maginovitz. Those are the choices. Anyway, all respect to this person. Mm-hmm. We, of course, greatly appreciate the work done by Dave Filoni, but I think that's just kind of the way humans can be. Sometimes you attach the big name to something, and then sometimes other names of people who do a ton of the work disappear a little bit. So once again, just wanted to celebrate and highlight this person who has been involved in creating a lot of the Star Wars stories that we love. So we also like talking about our viewing experience, where physically we were, what time of day it was, how we watched. Ken, what was your viewing experience?
It was nice and calm this morning. Woke up early, actually had a bad night of sleep, and Chihuahua was waking me up. So I got up nice and early, a lot of time, not rushed this morning. But also, a full disclosure, I think we had mentioned before, we are fortunate enough to, along with some Star Wars podcasts and pundits out there, to have access to some screeners. Which is not new for us, but Joseph, what is new for you and I is we are probably going to be looking at those a little bit more than we have in the past in other shows. You and I love the midnight experience. We love the communal experience. It's midnight for us. It's different times around the world. This is not a reflection of Bad Batch. It just works out. Like, you know what? Willow's going on. There's new shows. Mando's going to come along. Let's take advantage of it. So I watched these episodes a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
And sat on it. You have a little bit of that bleep eating grin sometimes. You're like, whoa, I know. And it's hard to sit with that. But it's just fun. And I think I take this show in a little differently. I kind of call it a lower pressure show, which is not a slight on, but the show, not a slight on animation, not a nothing. It's a feeling of fun that I enjoy. I enjoy the other shows for their own kind of version of fun, but being able to sit down on my own time and watch it, just relax over an English muffin this morning, making some notes. It was a lot of fun. I'm so thrilled that they're back.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I have not watched these episodes on the screener. There'll be some episodes coming up that just on a practical level, timing wise, it's going to really help to have the screener and be able to record our review a little bit earlier. But I've been super busy traveling for the holidays and I didn't have time, honestly, to watch the screener. So I got to that point of like, I could watch the screeners at like 9 p.m. on Tuesday night, or I could just stay up and I could have the midnight experience because I love it. It's such a new tradition in Star Wars that has now been around for so long. It's starting to get old. It's the old new tradition, right? Yeah. So I did what I always do, is think like, which of the action figures I own would be happy to watch the show with me. I don't have any of the Black Series Bad Batch friends, so I picked out a couple of other Clone Trooper action figure friends and poured myself a little bit of Johnny Walker, and I was like, this is great. Midnight Star Wars is back. And this is the first time that Midnight Star Wars and the Attack of the Sleepies came for me. First episode, great. Loved it. Second episode, I was all in. And then I just did that, like, did I blink and miss 1 second or 15 seconds? When I fell asleep, I believe Wrecker was shooting someone. He's still shooting someone, so it could be 1 second or 30 seconds that I've been out. So I got a little bit tired, even though I enjoyed them and had nothing to do with the shows itself, just been running hard with creative work, and I really need some vacations from my vacations. So I was excited to get up nice and early this morning, have a big cup of coffee and watch the shows again, which I always do in the morning. But there was something special about it for Bad Batch, because we'll get into the actual show itself. There is plenty of weight and meaning and horror, but there is something about it that is this sense of fun throughout these characters going through this hard time in the galaxy that gives it this great Saturday morning feel. Like, I just feel like I want to be in pajamas crunching on deeply unhealthy cereal or a Pop-Tart while I'm watching The Bad Batch. It feels like a Saturday morning show to me. So it was really nice to get up early and slam some coffee and watch Bad Batch.
Slightly concerned that you said that cereal's unhealthy that I ate for 2 decades. You say it's bad?
Oh, no. You mean like the Fruit Loops that are already full of sugar, and then kids would put sugar on the Fruit Loops anyway? Yeah.
You mean my Honey Nut Cheerios, in which I drizzled half a bear of honey on? Yeah.
Half a bear of honey. That takes me back. He's squeezing that bear, getting that honey. Yeah. Honey Nut Cheerios were actually as unhealthy as I was allowed to get cereal-wise. So I was living on the edge. Right. So anyway, we both had some great viewing experiences. Now let's get into the shows, the two shows. What was your overall reaction to this two-part premiere? Love it, like it, struggle with it? Where'd you go?
Oh, The Batch is back, and the action is hot and heavy. I really can't wait to get some of these themes.
Make it sound a little more adult than it is.
Hey, you know, a lot of things to get to, a lot of things. We got some Dooku stuff. We got some great stuff to get to. And we have to address, it's 2023. We're so used to the discourse. There's Andor, and it's a series, and adult, and this and that, and you're going to have those conversations out there. You don't need to. Nuts to that. This is a certain kind of Star Wars, and some of you might not like it, and that's totally fine. I just, from the start, the crabs come clickety clacking out. The chase is on. Witty banter, not so witty banter, all of it. I felt, I'm back with my friends. Doesn't mean I don't have friends at Andor. Doesn't mean I don't have friends at Kenobi or Book of Boba Fett or High Republic. I like these friends. I really love Wrecker. I love the crew. And it just felt warm. And there's great stuff to get into, of course, and some great guest stars, Wanda Sykes, Hector Elizondo. I'm an old school Pretty Woman fan. So I drove past the Beverly Wilshire Regent Hotel yesterday, twice, actually. I thought of Hector Elizondo. And then I forgot. Oh, yeah. He's in the episode as Romer Adele. So a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, that was a great revelation. It's like, who is this beautiful voice that sounds familiar? Oh, I have been listening to this person in random roles for my entire life. That's why. Yeah. That's why. Born in 1930s. Amazing. Yeah, my overall reaction was very much the same. I was just happy to see my buddies again. There's something about just the fun of Wrecker and the charm of Omega and the attitude of Sid kind of calling the characters out for exactly who they are with the quips, you know, wrestling with the darkness. And I just love Tech. He is my favorite from The Batch, one of my favorite Star Wars characters. And this was, man, Tech got to shine from the comedy and the action to the pain to the learning. These were great Tech episodes. So, I was jazzed about that. And my number one qualm with the first season of Bad Batch was just wanting Echo a little bit more centered. Echo's perspective was highlighted a couple times in the first season, that he is the one who went through hell and would have stayed there forever if other people hadn't cared enough to find him and rescue him. So he really understands how important it is to rescue others. That perspective was clear in the first season, but we didn't get to spend as much quality time with him.
Yeah.
And I feel like in these episodes, it was a little bit more balanced. It was a little bit more, Echo was a little bit more centered. So I was really happy to see that I felt like I got to see all my buddies.
Yeah. And I'm glad they're consistent with this thought of Echo kind of being the most convicted right now in his heart about what they got to do, which would track. They all went through some things, but like you said, he went through maybe a little more about what's going on and where he's at. So I really love that. And I agree, a little bit more Echo and we're starting to get it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I really liked starting with two episodes. The first season obviously premiered with the longer episode. And I really liked that this could have been a longer episode. And who knows, maybe it's, you know, production schedule. It's easier to keep them around the same length or whatever. But what was beautiful to me about having one story broken up into two episodes, even though they're released on the same day and you can just, you know, remove your hands with the controller and let Disney Plus take the wheel and immediately play the second episode. I loved the straight up actual cliffhanger. I've gone on and on about it in the past about one of the many inspirations for Star Wars is Flash Gordon, but specifically the Flash Gordon adventure serials that were entirely built on cliffhangers of how is Flash Gordon going to get out of this one this week. So I think Star Wars has always had that spirit of out of the, you know, frying pan into the fire, but to see that deployed in a straight up cliffhanger of they are plummeting to the ground, right? They're going to live, but that energy of that shipping container is just hurtling towards the planet. Ah, that was a thrill to have that actual cliffhanger.
Yeah, I agree there too. Agree with you too. You know, I don't know the production schedule, the reasons why you could have easily done it and fade in, fade out. It just had a little more impact. I think that might have been one of the reasons. It leads to one of my favorite shots so far in the first two episodes, the beginning of the second episode. So yeah, I agree with you. It was just kind of fun. A reminder of the serial adventure thing that we're getting back into. Sometimes it's going to feel like mission of the week, and sometimes it's going to feel like here's your marching orders for this episode and where are you going to go? And I get that, but that's kind of the purpose. It's kind of the point of what we got here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I really agree with that. I think it highlights the pulpy energy that Bad Batch does have. But it also worked really emotionally because I think we'll talk about it in more detail. But I think one of the things at stake in these two episodes is the idea of Omega, this kid needing to be taught how to defend herself, but needing to be kept safe. And she keeps ending up in danger. And the fact that it is her frightened face going, hey, am I going to die? Interesting. Okay. And, you know, an emotional cliffhanger as well, because it's about those emotional stakes as much as it is about the physical safety of the characters.
Yeah. Loved all that stuff. Yeah. We had a lot of, last year. We were part of the group yelling, give Omega some armor. So now we got a helmet, knee pads or something was on there. I can't remember. But now I'm just like, you just let her fall out of a ship. Turning handsprings off of crabs. Come on.
Unscheduled training break, I believe. Study break. Non-scheduled study break. You've been talking about the swings that are going to happen as different Star Wars shows come out and, you know, different people gravitate toward different one or play a compare and contrast kind of thing, which is all fine and understandable. I think for me, what I continue to love about the animated side, but Bad Batch in particular, is there is a balance to me of fun and horror, and these episodes really dove into that, you know? Mm-hmm. It is a ton of pulpy fun if you just look at the surface level, right? It's heists with space crabs, looting the castle of an evil wizard, you know? Lots of troopers falling from high places, character-driven old-school jokes. A lot of it is just fun, pulpy adventure. But at the same time, you know, our characters are remnants of an old war who aren't sure where they even fit. They're basically the audience's tour guides of a vicious crackdown by a tyrannical government. It's so weird to go like, I just want to hang out with my buddies. I just want to have a fun time as they tour the absolute horror of the galaxy, planet after planet, while kind of just trying to survive and only succeeding okay at that. Fun. I think it's a great example of the interesting Star Wars storytelling that can happen. And part of the reason I wanted to highlight it is just I feel like it's such the ingredients that make Bad Batch what it is. But also coming back to it after Andor, I feel like on paper, the issues that are at stake, the things we're going to talk about when we get into the themes and the big idea, they're very similar to Andor. It's just that they are told, they are expressed in a completely different way. And that's really interesting to me to say, to take the same ideas, but express them in a different way. The same way the very first Star Wars film, you know, Star Wars, what would become A New Hope, was received as this fun, exciting adventure where the good guys beat the bad guys. But if you look at it, there's absolute annihilation. Millions die. The princess is tortured by the person we discover as her father. Like, on paper, you know, Luke Skywalker cannot meet a parental figure without them quickly dying. It's a dark film, but it's told in a fun way. And I think that's a part of the heritage of Star Wars and what was revolutionary about Andor is like, let's really keep the focus on the horror.
Yeah, which clearly was effective, very clearly effective. Yeah, you're setting us up for exactly what we were going to be talking about here, which is exciting. And I can sometimes feel some blank stares, not necessarily from our Force Center listeners, but I can feel when I say this off air about the themes are the same. The things they're dealing with are the same. Talking about Andor and pretty much any other show. I get a lot of blank stares, which are okay. I'm not saying I have more insight than you or anything like that. I just, this is what happens when you open up your heart to all the things presented to you here. This does not have to be your favorite show. Because Bad Batch, I would not call my favorite of the Star Wars shows. It's just a special kind of fun that I enjoy that takes me to wonderful spots in a key time period that I absolutely love that we're studying right now.
Yeah. Because we just have not spent as much time in this exact time period. The whoops, uh-oh, across the galaxy as the Empire marches on. Mm-hmm. All right. So those are some overall reactions. Now we're going to get into the specifics, the big themes, the ideas at stake in these episodes. Ken, where did you go?
Well, you mentioned the March of the Empire. I put down this note of the crawl of Imperial oppression. I actually messed up and put impression as if it's two eyes, but maybe that's their catchy bumper sticker phrase on it. Just that leads to so much. And the big thing that jumps out for me, and I think it's a good place to start based on some of the stuff you're saying, I have this idea of securing your future, which is a good idea, versus securing a future for everyone, which is the big idea. And Star Wars is always asking us to do that. It's always asking you to consider that. It's always asking you to look at the big thing. You and I just have I just had a discussion that actually it's going to come out tomorrow on the Q&A episode, if you're listening in line, about Kenobi and Kenobi and his confrontation with Vader at the end of that series. And there's a lot of that at play too. And there's a reason it keeps being repeated in Star Wars. Omega is not the only one to save, but she is an important one to save. She's the reason. I love this episode kind of confirming the choice to save Omega for the group. Echo having that great stuff at the end, but him saying we should be doing more. And I put down this idea that this time period that I as a Star Wars historian, I guess, I don't know if that's I don't have that title. didn't get my degree in it, but I am loving and that was the biggest thing for season one. You mentioned it. They're tour guides for all of us to see the horrible, oops, this is happening around the galaxy. But a lot of people who got fooled, got tricked, just got wronged, and Palpatine's in power, people like Rampart underneath them, are doing this planet by planet, system by system. And this is the time for everyone to figure this out, securing your future versus a future for everyone. Because most don't, or most find a way to turn away from it, or most go into a survival mode, which is okay. We're going to talk some of that about that as well. But when you make that choice, again, most people don't make that choice. And we have that on Ferrix at the start of Andor. That's the connective thread to me. There's a lot of people that need to, by the end of that series, especially with Marva's speech and everything, are needing to say, we've got to save ourselves and everyone because we've just let this happen. Think a lot of a Nemec's speech and everything. And this is a time period where a lot of people were faced with this question in the galaxy and a lot of them didn't answer it in the possibly best way. I don't know. I don't want to force anyone to fight. And if they don't want to, I guess, but that's the thing that's going on with me in this series, in this episode.
Yeah, no, I think it's one of the big overriding questions of the series is kind of who the Bad Batch wants to be. They were built for a purpose. They found, looks like, plenty of joy and identity. And like, we are the special team that just, to use Wrecker's name, go in and wreck things. We can do anything, right? We are soldiers in the best there is. And now the war is over. We're not soldiers. We're a family. We're mercenaries. What are we? And I feel like these two episodes really reframe that decision of who are we? Who do we want to be? But as you laid out really, really well, it gets to that question of what is our goal for ourselves? Is it just survival for ourselves? Is it betterment for our personal lives? And if so, what the hell does that mean exactly? Mm-hmm. Or is Echo keeps pushing for, is it helping others? Because this family exists the way it does, because they made, in Echo's estimation, the correct choice to save Omega, which made them wanted, made it impossible for them to even consider being tools of the Empire. And that's that great thread where, you know, it hurts Omega's feelings, but Echo never meant it in a bad way. He meant it in an honest way of like, yeah, our lives are really difficult because we rescued this girl, because we should. So we should continue making our lives real difficult all the time to help other people. And I think kind of on the other side of it, Hunter is really pulling towards safety, particularly for Omega, you know, safety for his family, which is exactly what you're laying out, which is, yeah, does it relate to Andor saying, hey, Marvel, let's go somewhere warm and easy. And her great rant of like, I'm too old, it won't work, but I don't care, I'm fighting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, well said. I love what you said about Echo stuff, about what that means and the reality. You and I are not parents. We don't have that perspective, but I've had a parent, a good friend of mine tell me, if being a parent doesn't F up your life, you're doing it wrong, right? and I think that's a little bit of the sentiment of Echo. And Hunter's, it's what I love. I love when you and I dive into it. Hunter's perspective is, I get it, right? I get it. Yeah. We got out of that. One of the questions I have about the episode, it's not a dislike kind of question, but of like, all right, so we have a little bit of a jump in time, enough for a helmet to get on Omega here. A little bit of jump in time, and they're clearly on the run again. And they made some, I thought, big decisions at the end. They went through some big things at the end of season one. And we're still in the same spot, which is totally fine. I think that's realistic, but I want to know more. I want to know more from Hunter about why and how he's going to continue to change and grow, and how much Echo will pull him forward there. And it's an honest answer. Secure your future. That's you know, you kind of got to secure yourself before you can help others, I guess you could say, if you have that perspective. And Hunter's in that boat right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Hunter definitely wants safety and security for Omega, and definitely worries about putting her in the line of fire constantly. She made it clear to him last season that was her choice. So he's letting her grow up that way, not trying to keep her away from the missions and all that. But I also just kind of feel like Hunter is really understandably looking for stasis, looking for anything kind of normal, right? Because he's the one who says, hey, look, we made a lot of noise on Kamino. We've been really keeping our heads down. We learn at the end of the episodes with Rampart and his desire to convince Tarkin that he Rampart did wipe out the Bad Batch, that Hunter's maybe right to keep their heads down. I just feel like there's a lot that I really appreciated in the opening scenes that kind of kept setting this possibility of peace, normal life, and then in almost a comic way shattering it. But I thought that it reflected Hunter's headspace, right? The first shot is the tranquil beach, and we hold on it just long enough to go, that looks nice. And then you got the great comic suddenly running out and splashing into it, right? Mm-hmm. And then we cut to Tech in Omega having kind of like this family scene, right?
Yeah.
Omega's doing her homework, studying. She and Tech are fishing. Wham, that's shattered, right? Yeah. Omega and Hunter are once again in the bar. Hunter thinks he's successfully said no to this dangerous job. He's sitting there prepping Omega for Star Wars trivia.
Yeah, totally.
Comparing Lambda and Delta class shuttles. And then that's shattered, right? Mm-hmm. There's keeps being these images of what if we could be on a beach? What if we could just be Omega's parents teaching her things? What if we could just be fishing? And the episode right at the beginning keeps kind of going wham, 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 you can't, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that there's this element where Hunter just kind of wants to find a groove and keep everybody safe. There's even an element of stasis to what he says to Cid when Cid's kind of trying to convince him to take the job and says, you can get freedom. And Hunter's like, we already got it. That's speaking to stasis of like, this is fine. Let's just keep going this way.
Yeah, Cid and Marva are in agreement there, right? Not just going to do a contrast, compare and connective threads to Andor, but it's fresh on our minds. I mean, Cid's got different energy than Marva, but kind of like, oh, you freedom. Oh, you think you have freedom. All right, cool. Look around.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think you know, Marva's having this awakening. You know, she's full of wisdom, but in terms of fighting the Empire, she's having this sort of awakening and this epiphany. Like, Cid's kind of an old hand at, you know, how to survive. And I thought that it was great that the Bad Batch pretty consistently wants freedom, but they sometimes either disagree about what that means or don't know how to define it. Yeah. Like, some of us in the real world is like, I want to be free. What does that mean? I want to go to bed at 2 a.m.? I don't know. I don't want other people to tell me what to do. I don't, you know. But I wrote down the Cid line because Cid, like, masterfully pressures all of them in their different views by offering multiple versions of what freedom might mean. Yeah. And you know, dangling this job in front of them to get the freedom. She says, you want to be really be free, then pull off this heist and you'll have the means to disappear. No more risky missions, no more living hand to mouth. You can have a future. Isn't that what you're after? So she's really appealing to Hunter's desire to keep Omega safe. But, you know, no more living hand to mouth. You can have a future. Isn't that what you're after? You know, I think is, you know, really appealing to Echo's desire to get resources, you know?
Yeah. And build out from there. This is the, you know, we can't all just sit back and have pizzas the rest of our life. Yeah. But I like, yeah, like what you're saying about the way she's just driving home to each one of them and raising the question of what it is. And even Cid would probably just like to retire and get away and have pizzas the rest of her life. So even her version is not probably in line with Echo, but I love the starting point. Love that's to me the big theme. That moment was the theme of like, is this what you want? Your future? And now Echo's here to say there's others that we got to consider.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the episode goes through a lot of supporting Echo's vision that people need to be helped, and also supporting Hunter's vision that, hey, we, in order for us to help people, we need to survive, you know?
Yeah, 100%, 100%, especially when we get down to the surface.
Yeah, and I think for me, I thought a lot about the end beats in this context of who do they want to be, choosing, you know, their fate. Do they help themselves or do they help others? You know, Echo and Omega have that misunderstanding, and Echo, you know, clarifies it at the end for Omega that, hey, if we hadn't rescued you, we'd have ended up serving the Empire or worse, mm-hmm. and like, that to him is like that you can't choose that. And I feel like that scene with Rampart and the clone Wilco, it sets up the plot for the rest of the season, that Rampart wants to hide the survival of Clone Force 99, and I'm sure wants to track them down and finish them himself. But on a thematic level, it just kind of reinforces Echo's closing thought, right? That there, whatever future they might have, the Bad Batch, it is far better than the future they would have had trying to serve the Empire, because whatever definition they have of freedom, whatever definition they have of who they are, it's not possible with the Empire. Look at this clone commander Wilco, who's doing everything by the book, right? And yeah, honor is not possible for a clone serving the Empire. I feel like that's part of what's, you know, the thematic point of that brutal murder. And the I always like it when a trooper falls from a high place, but I didn't like this one. This one was sad.
Yeah, no, it's sad and a reminder of a lot of things about the Empire and what's going on, but raising the thematic stakes. I also like Echo kind of at the end of the episode has the Indiana Jones and Dr. Jones let it go moment as trying to get the shiny stuff, as she says it. Echo coming to this, yeah, kind of realization there. Yeah, we want to do something about the Empire. Yeah, it'd be nice to have funding for that and for our own survival. But tells Omega to let it go, not just, again, her survival, but to me, this point that the actions are worth more than anything else, and they can still find a way. And versus the other side, you see the Wilco ending of someone who's just followed the right orders. Good soldiers follow orders, and look where that's getting you.
Yep. Unfortunately. Good soldiers get betrayed and shot off cliffs. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're touching on, for me, what was the other big thematic idea, and I'm sure that you have got ideas. I'm curious to see how you framed it, but I felt like, for me, what was interesting about these episodes is it did sort of reframe the big picture Bad Batch question of what is their future going to be, who do they truly want to be. But the real specific idea in these two episodes is this idea of what is treasure, right? Mm-hmm. That the episodes are set up as a treasure hunt. You just quoted the great line from Omega about, you know, we're after the shiny stuff, but what is the shiny stuff and why? What are fake jewels? What are real jewels? You know, yeah. I think this very big picture thing that they go in fighting for treasure with different motivations. For Hunter, it's then they can hide out and be safe, right? Mm-hmm. And for Echo, it's with this money, they can get out and help people and start building something. The treasure is really important to Bad Batch as they go in, right? Mm-hmm. But both Hunter and Echo drop it real quick because they go in fighting for treasure and they end up quickly recognizing all we are doing is fighting for our lives. The great treasure of this mission for the Bad Batch is escaping with their family alive and intact. And I thought that was just a great statement on the growth of this team, that they are a family. And even though Hunter and Echo might kind of disagree, they both let go of their vision of the treasure immediately when the rest of the family is at risk.
Yeah, this is a wonderful theme here. This is a great test. You look through that little toy that robot has. To me, the simple idea of happiness is more than any jewel. You could go that way, but I love everything you're saying here. He calls himself a survivor, and I think you and I both have kind of said, you know, again, looking at Hunter's perspective, yeah, you can help others better when you're alive, unless you're a Jedi. So that is very key. And so I love when Romar's like, I'm a survivor, because what's the true jewel for me? What is, he got going on? It's this Serenians before the war, preserving their culture beyond the titles of Separatists versus Republic. That's what he sees in this. That's part of why he's going on. And I love this little litmus test you got for all of them here. Look down at those jewels and what do you see? And what are you here for? And I think you're right. I think Hunter ends up in a pretty powerful spot that way. And gets it pretty fast.
Yeah. And I think in a way it's validating of both their perspectives, right? Because they encounter yet another civilization that has been cruelly violated, decimated, a likable, heroic person in Romar, the exact kind of person who needs their help. So that justifies Echo's perspective. And then the fact that the mission just very quickly turns into just survival really validates Hunter's perspective, that the true treasure is keeping them all safe and alive. I think part of what I liked about it is you could watch these episodes real quick and go, well, this is fun adventure serial cliffhanger. They've got a problem. They got another problem. But I feel like it had this sort of deeper level of, you know, remembering where the Bad Batch started out of, like, they could go in and do anything. They were the four commandos who could take out anyone, anything, no amount of droids was a problem for them, right?
Yeah.
And now they're vulnerable and fallible. And there's a sense that the Empire is closing in around them, that the Bad Batch has to hide from the Empire in specific. The awareness that the Empire will eventually come for Ord Mantell and this will end. And then when they get in the planet, that they're overwhelmed by the number of troops. They're overwhelmed by the scale of the operation on Sereno, that Tech actually gets injured, right? The fact that they spend almost the entire kind of action of these two episodes just trying to escape and survive really drives home this idea of what is treasure? Maybe it is just community, family, you know, everything that is meaningful to them as individuals because they love each other the same way Romar loves Sereno.
Yeah. I love this, especially you lay this down over the first episode, season one, right? It's exactly what you're describing. They show up, they're the bad boys of the clone world, you know, they're indestructible, unstoppable. Then they're hit with the Order 66 stuff, which launches them there. And now here you are, like you say, yeah, Tech, fractured femur, like she broke his leg. Wrecker got to find a way, all the kind of things, just where they are versus what they were and where they were before it and everything around them. I think it was that's why I love this as a start to the season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then I think on an even, there's that question for the Bad Batch of, you know, what is the treasure of this episode? And of course they would have loved to get that money.
Sure.
But survival is more important and preserving who they are is more important. But then I think the episodes kind of go this level deeper. And this is where it gets into me. Like, these are very similar ideas to Andor. These are extremely similar ideas to the Solo film, right? Mm-hmm. Of asking what is treasure? If you're looking at a heist, is somebody is taking something from someone, who does it truly belong to? What is it for? All those things. You know, I like that the episodes even start by them taking something from the space crab planet and angering the inhabitants. I don't, I don't think they took space crab eggs, but maybe. There's this great framing conversation between Omega Tech and Echo, where Omega says, "How could all this belong to one person?" referring to Dooku's jewels. Tech says, "It is safe to assume that the majority of Dooku's fortune came from the many worlds he controlled and exploited, all in the name of his war effort." Echo says, "That's what corrupt people do." But isn't that what we're doing? Omega says, "Depends on how we use it." So I love that the episode invites you to think through, this is a treasure, Dooku's war chest, but whose is it and what does it mean? Because it kind of rattles through different perspectives of the Empire wants it to fund their tyranny, right? Mm-hmm. Hunter wants it to provide safety, just safety and a little bit of personal freedom, which is just totally the coaxium in Solo, right? Whoever has a little bit of that resource can have a little bit of freedom. For Echo, it's a tool to help others. For Tech, it's an equation on a spreadsheet. He's got that. Yeah. Well, we didn't have it before and we don't have it now. So, okay. and then, of course, we get the great twist and the reveal from Romar that those treasures are not necessarily plundered from other worlds, but plundered from Dooku's people himself. So it raises this great question of what is a treasure? What does it mean to other people? And it gives us all these answers that lets us think about, if we want to, in the real world, who controls resources and what do those resources accomplish?
Yeah. You think of Enfys Nest saying this represents something new, life, survival, rebellion, resistance. Yeah. I was really, intrigued. The moment they said they're going to Serrano, even the title Spoils of War, I had that kind of, you know, going in war chest kind of vibe here we go. And just seeing and the reveal confirming what we probably could have guessed about Dooku, that a lot of his funding for his war efforts weren't his own big bank accounts. just the image of taking from his own people. And you know, you and I have talked about the separatists. You can go to the Mina Bonteris of the world and say, hey, they have some points of view and this, that. But they were inflamed by Dooku. They were controlled by a Sith Lord. And here's the deal. It is similar to Dooku's look on his face seconds before Anakin slices his head off. I can only imagine the people of Serrano looking up and seeing, well, you know, an Imperial orbital bombardment's about to happen. Like, this wasn't the deal, man. This wasn't the deal. We gave this guy everything. We believed in his causes, and that wasn't a treasure to him. To your question. He didn't
protect. Yeah, I mean, and there's a question of how much people gave it to him versus the story of in Dooku Jedi Lost that he murdered his siblings and took control.
Turns out he's not as principled as people might have thought, you know.
Yeah, it's complex. It's complex. But in that history, you know, hangs over this in a really great way. But let me ask you that question. Do you get the vibe that Romar was ever on the separatist train or just felt like, I care about Serrano, I care about our people, our culture, a little bit of the Hunter perspective, and now we're in this war?
I think a little bit of, I think that's what I took that line of, you know, Serenian, you know, we that's what we were before the war. Again, this idea of separatist versus Republic might be a simple way to look at it. But again, even in our real world and even in the Star Wars world, it's complicated. But to your question, I think that to me speaks to the people on the ground, the people perhaps disenfranchised by the Republic and starting off, even the stuff that Dooku saw in Tales of the Jedi, which isn't necessarily just on Serrano, but that's a good starting point, right? But they don't care about your Game of Thrones up there. the small folk don't care about that. They want a long summer. They want to eat. So I think this is another example of, as we're watching the Empire having won, having now spread across the galaxy, this is who it's affecting, right? Mm-hmm. It's not someone who took up arms against the Republic. Now the Republic has become the Empire. He has that great equation. So wait, you were clones for the rebellion. You're fighting, and then the text, you know, like, I think you're finally getting it. So I love that what it says, you know, it's just doing that math. But It could sound cynical about just whatever the name is on the top is, it's all the same, right? You and I don't like that kind of approach in our own world. It's follow the empathy and what that organization or what that person is doing with the jewels and the power and everything. So long-winded answer to your question. I think this speaks to, this is what's happening. There's a lot of people in the galaxy who are now being horribly affected by what's going on. Who, you know, might not have wanted this or might have just been going with the flow or might have just been trying to survive during the war.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the implication in Dooku Jedi Lost or the story that Sereno is being sort of violated and becomes a war planet out of the hubris and backroom dealings of Dooku's brother. And Dooku, you know, goes in and saves the planet against Jedi wishes, right? And there's a kind of implication that maybe Dooku kind of sets things right on Sereno, and maybe somebody like Romar is like, okay, well, fine, great. Now, you know, things are, there's an even keel. We can have the peace and prosperity that we want, and it's not enough. You got to go reaching out to control the rest of the galaxy, and you bring this horror to us.
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
Yeah. I was also really just interested in how much the idea of what is treasure was kind of depicted in this big picture way. Everybody had a take on what is the value of Dooku's war chest, what's the meaning of it. But so much of it was centered on Omega, right? And the episode is pretty direct with some of the stuff, which is great. But I love that for her, she needs the treasure to prove herself, right? To make her feel like she isn't a burden. That's the value of the treasure to her. That's what's shiny to her, is to feel like I'm not a burden on this family. My existence hasn't brought the pain and difficulties of our life. You know, what a tender, great thing. And then all the stuff with Romar giving her the toy, you know, it's not, you know, amazingly subtle.
which is fine.
I just want to, you know, not say like I discovered this hidden thing in the episode. It's quite clear. Omega's line of then it's not treasure. And Romar, oh, for blast's sake, it's a toy, makes you happy, and believe me, that is worth more than any jewel. I think it's just a really beautiful message in the midst of all of this absolute horror that Romar would define for her: joy, happiness, connection. What is your culture? Who are your people? To quote Drod Mundbrin from Solo, those are these basic things that are treasures. Like, I know it can come off a little simple and pat, and people hear the violins, but for me, I like storytelling where a simple but true and beautiful point is made, and it is heightened by the horror around it. Right. It makes you feel that, like, wouldn't this child just like a toy? Wouldn't you like to live in a world where you can just have a toy and that's joyful, instead of living in a world where I have to re-steal stolen resources so I don't feel like my existence is a burden on my four dads?
the sad view of I got to go get a win just to, you know, make up for it, which is why we're happy Echo at the end. No, I love your saying, and in terms of, like, this episode, all through it is not subtle, right? All the stuff with Dooku, all the stuff taken from his own people, the destruction of Sereno, this bombarded city. I love that it's right there. We can always admit that we love going deep and we love connecting themes, but often I think you and I say we're just looking at what's there. And that's the joy of this. And I think sometimes that's the beauty of a show like Bad Batch, that you can just point at it and go, this is what Star Wars is trying to tell you, and how this has value for a certain younger generation of fan or a different kind of a Star Wars fan than any of the other shows, which are dealing with the same themes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that it's clear with Omega, you know, as you said, in the great sort of Indiana Jones moment of the needing to let the treasure go, let her fear and anxiety go so she can survive. Yeah. And, you know, she gets a different definition of treasure, and we're left to wonder how much that has sunk in, how much she's learned from that. But I also like that the kind of closing montage is a lot of people. This is a failed mission, right? They didn't get one single shiny thing, but they all come away with a treasure that encourages them to kind of value who they are, their internal selves, you know. Omega's got that toy. that can possibly teach her great things. There's that wonderful scene where Wrecker pats his new tank blaster he made, and it's like, it's so funny because it's like so violent, but it's so sweet because it's like, that's a treasure to him. That's who he is, right?
Yeah.
Echo's got, you know, his conviction that rescuing Omega is the right choice. Even after everything they went through, you know, and didn't get any treasure, he's happy at the end of the day because, like, they're on the right path, you know? And then Romar, you know, it's not part of the ending montage, but that the great treasure for him, he doesn't want any of the money or the resources back. He wants what Serenia was to be preserved, that type two data core, our culture, art, music, memories. So it's to me, it's an even deeper statement than, you know, the real treasure is friends. it's deeper than that. It's who are you? What do you value? Be true to that. That's your treasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Unlock that treasure chest inside your heart. There you go. I said it. That's the moral. Yeah, absolutely. I love what you said at the end. Just not everyone getting what they want like it's a reward. Again, you're right. It's a failed mission, but setting us up for what's coming up down the line and what matters to them all and them discovering themselves as individuals within this group as well.
Yeah, and I think for me, it kind of leaves off with the Bad Batch of like, okay, well, that was our way to get a big score and get out, so I guess we'll keep grinding. How did you feel about where it left Bad Batch?
I it makes a lot of sense thematically, and I like it, and it's like there's no easy way out of this, right? Mm-hmm. And the galaxy is calling you into this. This is a little bit of destiny leading you some choices here, and there's, you know, there's no sandals and beachfront Niamos property coming for you either. And that's what's going on in the galaxy. And again, I said, this is an important question that everyone is maybe being asked, and there's going to be a lot of different answers. And a lot of them are going to lead to the Empire growing and growing stronger, leading up to some of the moments, not just Andor, but rewatching parts of Kenobi, Bail Organis, and the Empire's getting bolder, stronger. All that stuff that's coming down the line really does start here. And so I am, you know, I'd love them to get a little easier week, little vacation, maybe takes money, but not going to happen. And that's often what happens to all of us.
Yep. In life. But look at all the joy they're finding in communicating to us, the audience, in their love of one another.
Mm-hmm.
And Mantel Mix. Any other thoughts on the big picture ideas and themes?
No, we hit some of the ones I wanted to hit with the Dooku stuff too. Just fascinating. I just think it's I think it's an important time in the Star Wars timeline to just see this happen, to be on the ground. I think that's a big reward for season one for me. And this is going to continue to grow. We get these clones who are going to be experiencing, their very existence being perhaps wiped from the Empire. And all that stuff's kind of at play, what's going on. And I think it's important. I think it's important to study in Star Wars.
Yeah. And I have to admit, you know, talking about it again and again about the tour of the galaxy and getting things like a central thing like Dooku and his castle to see it absolutely fallen from the power it has does get me excited for what are some other known places that we can see how they are impacted by the Imperial, you know, lockdown.
Yeah. And who and whom shall show up to, you know?
Yeah. I got some thoughts and hopes. Maybe we can discuss as the season goes on.
Yeah, we know some, but there's, I'm sure, more on the way.
Yeah, Gungi, the Jedi Padawan perspective, great. Hoping for some other perspectives. But for now, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to dive into some action, some comedy, all that great stuff in a moment.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the season 2 premiere of Bad Batch: Spoils of War and Ruins of War. There was a lot of great action. I think a lot of great comedy and whimsy and weirdness. So we're going to go first to action. Ken, did you have a favorite action moment or two in these two episodes?
Yeah, right from the start, I mentioned up top, I was having fun with the idea of Here's Omega jumping off of crabs and shooting that bow. That's a fun sequence. I think this is a trailer moment, right? I think this is something we'd already kind of seen, and I just like that we started with it, which means we got more great action yet to come that we haven't seen yet. And it's just, you know, the serene, here it is, like you said, the beach, the water, and here comes these clickety-clackety crabs, and they're running, they got the banter, but just Omega is, her place in the team is secure. We know we got some big themes and stuff in this episode to come, but, you know, just... there, she is part of the team, part of the action. There's some concern. I'm sure Hunter's still worried. They're still wondering why she's hanging out of the ship. But I just love that opening sequence. It was a lot of fun and very pulpy action. You got multicolored clickety-clackety crabs trying to kill you. And they're reacting, too. Like, I don't know. You're right. You might be right. They might be more sentient than I think because when she starts shooting, one of them's like, ah! And like, starts going after it. So I love that. I just love the sequence.
Yeah, I loved the whole sequence as well, but I think my favorite moment was, you know, Omega falls on the cable. You know, everybody is about Omega's safety and survival, and Tech's like, let the line go, get back up here, you know. Hunter eventually's like, why is she hanging off the ship? And she kind of has that moment where she's trying to climb up, and then we get this shot of her, and it's almost like, you know, if I'm going to be in danger anyway, I'm going to help my dads. You know, and it's just a great spirit of who Omega's character is. I love that moment of decision where she's like, bleep it, and slides down, you know, and starts attacking the space crabs with her weapon of choice. And I love that one moment where the one space crab gets wise and dives in its shell, and the shot ricochets off.
Yes. I want to know more about the crabs. I do. I actually do.
Right now on Wikipedia, I looked them up to see if there is anything defining yet. They are listed on Wikipedia as unidentified crab creatures. So,
okay.
Looking forward to more details coming in. They're not an obscure thing from an EU book that we don't know. They are unidentified crab creatures. What are some other action moments that you enjoyed, and how many of them are Wrecker?
A lot of Wrecker. I could have put this in comedy, but just him saying, "I make a pretty good tank." I absolutely love that. love that there. But no, there was a moment there with they're escaping and they release all the storage units, and it was like a Jenga puzzle fell over in slow motion. I just thought it was beautiful in its own violent way. I love that sequence. Great lines, great banter all the way through. Everyone using their skills as best they can, but just this, like, this is how we get out of it. And I just love, there's something about just like a perfectly stacked display at a store, and you just want to yank out the one in the middle and see what happens when they fall. Might just be me, but I loved it.
Yeah, I love that moment because I thought, oh, are they just trying to disengage one, mm-hmm. you know, the container that they're in? So the shock that it just kind of all falls apart and they just start whistling away, that was really great and just a great visual.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a couple Wrecker moments I like, but my very favorite, I almost put it in comedy, is when there's this sense of evolution that Wrecker is trying to be stealthy, but he still can't imagine not stunning someone.
Yeah.
And that shot where he stuns the clone and the clone just face plants so their head is hidden from us, the audience. It was a weird Star Wars meets Charlie Brown moment, and it was hilarious.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. So what are others for you?
A lot of wonderful moments, but I mentioned earlier, I think the opening shot of episode two, you got the destroyed castle, totem of Dooku's lost power, this reminder of it. And you just slowly pan up and just silently, then you suddenly see all the canisters falling. Great way to pick up the cliffhanger, and just this beautiful shot amongst the violence. I just really thought that was great and very, almost Mission Impossible like, or just big action moment in this beginning of the second episode.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a tech moment I really liked where they were still trying to make it to the escape pods, and he just kind of casually chucks the shock grenade without even really looking. It was cool to see like a shock grenade, since they seem, mm-hmm. you know, committed to not using it when possible. Fatal tactics against the other clones. But it was almost like Tech had already, you know, calculated the amount of force needed at that angle.
Yeah.
And it was just so casual. Shunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really great one. I think the final one for me is one you already mentioned. The boom, I make a pretty good tank is a great line. But, you know, Wrecker and Hunter had really been on their heels, like just barely getting away, barely surviving. And Wrecker comes up with this, you know, great workaround, this great invention. And then there's this shot from the perspective of, I believe, Wilco, of Wrecker walking through the smoke, a one clone tank. And it was like truly terrifying and a great sort of fist pumping. The tables have turned.
Yeah, no, man. My God, my man, Wrecker. Now a tank.
Yeah.
No, a
yeah. Any other action moments for you?
No, a lot of great pew, pew, pew action. I do love the commitment to the stun gun. Just kind of tracks. I think that V-Wing pilot probably punched out. But no, a lot of fun. And it just the speed momentum of these episodes. It was a fun rewatch, too.
Yeah, I did like the one clone that was stumbling that looks like it was recovering from the first stun. They stun him again.
Yeah, he stunned him. Yeah.
Solid. A lot of these action moments it's hard to say. Are they action? Are they comedy? So let's get into some comedy, some whimsy, some weirdness. What were some fun moments for you?
I like it right from the start of that sequence. I love the crab chase and everything. We went over the plan five times, and Wrecker's response of, I got the package, didn't I? The reason I love that is I'm kind of, when it comes to video games or even just life sometimes, I'm a little bit of a Leroy Jenkins. I heard your plan. I'm just going to run in and do it. A little bit of a philosophy I have on overtraining anyways, but I just love it. It's a giveaway. I connect with Wrecker. Yeah, we got the check. The check is by the box. All right. We got the box. That was our mission for this level of the video game. How we did it doesn't matter. We got here.
Yep. No, I have definitely played some co-op games with people who love to sneak. I love to sneak in theory, but then sometimes, like, it's a game. Why not have them all come after me? Let's have some fun with this, you know?
If you ever watch me play Fortnite on duos, oh man, that's me. I get impatient after a while. Just let's run in there.
Yeah. In that opening sequence, I do really like the Hunter's, why is Omega hanging off the ship? Mm-hmm. The real inter-parent bickering there, and Tech's answer of it is an unscheduled study break, which is just, I love that his comedy comes from being very literal, but he also seems to be evolving where he is sometimes aware that there can be sarcasm and irony within his literalness, which he didn't seem as aware of in the previous season.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that you highlighted that line. I do think it's a bit of a growth in the character. I really do, because that you can't, there's no way that that's just literal, right? There's no right. way in his mind he's thinking, well, this that's what's happening, right? No, so I love that there's a little bit of a comedy heart beating inside of Tech.
Yep, exactly. And then when they do escape and take off, I know the unidentified crab creatures are meant to just be sort of like pinching at them. But man, does it look like they're using their big space claws to just flip off the Marauder as it flies away, right?
Clickety-clack.
Clickety-clack. If they could cross one claw over the other mm-hmm. and just do that classic gesture, it seems like that's what they want to do.
Love that.
What are some other moments then going forward, comedy whimsy-wise?
Yeah, it's as you said so well, action and comedy mix really well. When they get to Serrata, the first clone is stunned and he just falls over face first against the wall.
Yeah. You
know, after a hard day, a glunk, I love that there. There's a line, I can't remember where, I didn't write down the full beat, but where Tech says, that is concerning. I just, again, going to his by the books delivery, it's really funny.
Yeah, so many great tech lines. I really liked, if I am incorrect, we will instantly be sucked out and perish. I am seldom wrong.
Yeah.
There's that great thread with Omega studying, and it's got this nice sense of, hey, she's the kid, she's doing the homework, but there is also this explicit, like, she needs to know everything so she can be safe. And I do like that she is mm-hmm. the one who knew the tech and came up with a plan. So she says that the box units have the rockets, and I love that Tech says, you are correct, I am impressed.
Yeah, no, it means a lot that it isn't just mindless training. It's, you're in this world, you need to know, you're part of the team, we need to get you up to speed. Love it.
Yeah, the delivery there is so great of, like, he is impressed, but he doesn't really have time to discuss it or focus on it.
No. Yeah.
They're in the middle of thing. And then maybe the classic line from Tech these two episodes of Omega asks, are you okay? And his, my left femur has been fractured by approximately 150 kilograms of pressure. So, no.
He has a line, too, that I love. That was smoother than some of Wrecker's attempted landings. I would love a smash cut, a Family Guy-like smash cut to, like, five in a row.
And the attempted landings also makes it seem like maybe Tech is the main pilot, has been trying to teach Wrecker.
Yeah.
Because it seems like Tech thinks everybody should be able to pilot the Marauder quite well. And Wrecker's the one who's having a little bit of a Leroy Jenkins problem with it.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. So what are some more moments for you?
There's a great exchange. Don't move, says Omega. Romar says, I'm not. I like little comedy bits like that. I mentioned before, Romar tracing the clones, who they're fighting for is a real funny beat, as well as poignant.
Yeah, so you're telling me that you're rogue clones running from the Empire's clones, who used to be the Republic's clones. Yeah, very funny, very honest, but I also felt like a little bit of meta of, like, mm-hmm. there are some things in Star Wars that are pretty straightforward. There are some things that are quite confusing if you're not deep into Star Wars and are just, hey, y'all, I think I'll try out that Bad Batch season 2. Why are all the armor people mad at each other?
Why is their armor all painted weird? Yeah, you got to keep it just basic writing, right? Even Wanda Sykes' character there, Genoa?
Yeah.
Has a great, just setting the tone again here, setting the stage.
Yeah, this one has a face tattoo, real subtle. That mm-hmm. that was a great line.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I think last one for me is it's a key line for, I think, the lessons that are trying to be imparted to Omega. But Romar is saying, oh, for blast sake, it's a toy, makes you happy. And believe me, that is worth more than any jewel. I felt just so greatly validated as an adult who collects toys. And some I can write essays. I've been writing some narrative stuff with characters dealing with what toys mean. I could write many an essay about what toys mean. But at the end of the day, sometimes just like, yeah, I look over and they make me happy for one second. And dad is worth a lot.
That's the value. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the value. So it's like, oh, thank you. Thank you for the validation, Romar Adell.
Indeed. Yeah.
Any more for you?
No, a lot of banter throughout. So more on the way during the season, I'm sure, but I love it. Love being home with my banter boys.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to move on to canon. This was, you know, not riddled with stuff, but I want to start with the big one, which is the return to Sereno, the return to Dooku's castle. We talked a little bit about sort of some of the clear meanings of it, but for you, what was, you know, interesting, valuable, cool about being back there again? There can be discussion in Star Wars land about revisiting too many of the same characters or revisiting too many of the same places. We often feel like, well, there's always a storytelling reason, or usually a storytelling reason. For you, what was the storytelling reason? What was the reason to be back at Dooku's castle specifically?
I mean, just to really explore this idea of, here we're post-war Sereno, what you and I were saying earlier, this is Dooku's hometown, and you know, there's Dooku the Great Separatist, and all it was just about him getting more powerful, and in the end, the Imperial orbital bombardment, same as Kamino. Here's what the Empire's doing. They're erasing all evidence, and that's from the ground up. Even Rampart and his thing of, well, can't have my mistake out there, that these, now I gotta lie about that, we gotta cover that, and this is, to me, just the Empire doing that. And again, to see it, we are in inside a year after the Great Switch, as I call it, from the Republic to the Empire. I think that's the value of it, to actually fully see it, and to see all that noise from Dooku, all the posturing, all the understandable beginnings of doubt turning into this destruction for his own people. I think it's sad, it's tragic, but I think, again, part of the Star Wars story and its value. Valuable to go down to the ground and see that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it serves the plot purpose of, this is where he would have kept his personal hoard that he used to empower himself and to fight the Clone War. But it is just this, it is a classic Star Wars story of, you wanted all this power. Power was more important to you than anything. And not power so you can help other people or share it, but power so you can hoard it, so you can control others. And where did all this bring you? What did you get? It's just a visceral reminder of it. You know, Romar says that his quest for power is why our city is now buried in rubble. Great connections to historian Dooku, Jedi Lost, where I think for me, he, on some level, he believes in his heart that the Jedi are meant to help people, but my hands are always tied. And now my people, my planet, is in trouble, and they're asking the Jedi for help, and the Jedi won't get involved because it's allegedly an internal matter. And I'm going to go help my people. I'm going to use my power. So whatever kernel of Dooku truly believed, I'm going to walk away from the Jedi so I can actually use my power to help my people, to look where, how far he got from that. Like, my pursuit of power brought absolute just horror and wreckage down on my people, literally. And, you know, as evidenced by Romar's, you know, data box there, their history, who they are, their identity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought that was effective. Just Dooku's main throne room / office. This place gives me the creeps, this record, but seeing the trapdoor, just the reminders of the shadowy figure that Dooku was, and what he was hiding, and what he was hiding from his own people, and perhaps from himself deep down inside, if you want to get philosophical.
Yeah, and I think that's, for me, my final thought on the return to Dooku's castle is, I do think that you can revisit certain stories or certain beats too much, but this is what I find valuable about a connected galaxy, is the audience, if you've been watching all these animated shows, has a visceral relationship to that place. Mm-hmm. We saw countless scenes in animated series, in the Dark Disciple book, where Dooku was untouchable in that castle, right? The scenes where the Night Sisters come from him and he's, you know, blinded, but fighting, you know, so powerfully in his exquisite pajamas, you know?
Yes.
Scene after scene where he's torturing people, plotting against people. That is his stronghold. That is a symbol of his power, and nothing can touch it. So for me, I have like a visceral relationship of, when I see that, place, it is a place of untouchable power and menace. And then to just see it as this derelict building with shattered windows just being cleared out like an estate sale, that contrast for me is visceral because I have a relationship with the place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, if you linger there, yeah, it's possible to go back too much. I totally understand that. Again, great purpose. And just, again, as a Clone Wars fan, kind of crazy to see it. Not fun to revisit it, I guess, but crazy to see it in this form.
Yeah. So since we were kind of teasing it in the first half of the podcast, are there specific places or planets that you want to see the Imperial boot come down on?
I hadn't thought about it in full.
I just threw it at you.
No, you did. Cause you could almost, truthfully could almost be any spot. And just to see the people affect, I was going to say, we spent a lot of time on Ryloth and we know that's a different experience there. I'll admit, curveball. Let me come back to that when I think of all the planets in the galaxy.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No. I should have anticipated that.
No. It just really occurred to me because as we were talking, I got more excited about it. I think particularly I have Naboo on my mind because it's such a big world that we haven't revisited as much. We go there in the Clone Wars. We get, you know, in the publishing side, a hint of what it might be like after the Galactic Civil War in the Aftermath book. The Lego shows have visited it during the height of the Empire and been to the Palpatine Museum. But Naboo would have this very different vibe after the Empire, right? Because it's where the Emperor comes from. It's his home planet. So it needs to be sort of celebrated and he needs to be venerated there. But Palpatine in his heart also knows there's a bunch of artsy, community-loving do-gooders. That place boils with do-gooders. So I kind of got to bring my boot down on it while also using it as a place to celebrate me. So yeah. I'm just kind of fascinated by seeing fully in canon on screen what Naboo looks like right now.
Yeah, as long as we can do a close-up on Panaka's face, him weighing his options.
Yeah. All right. So we'll move on to other canon. And if you have anything you want to throw out, feel free about other planets or places or buildings to visit. So Omega Studies, we talked about a little bit. It's great. She's studying the V-Wing on the data pad. And then the V-Wing shows up is the escort ship. And then she is studying different shuttles. The Lambda or Delta question from Hunter. The last time I studied for the Star Wars Schmodown Trivia Contest, the Star Wars competition had become very obsessed with the super specific numbers and models of ships and blasters. So I spent a bunch of time trying to memorize exactly this. So it's kind of funny and kind of terrifying. It was a flashback of studying for trivia. How did you feel about that?
Same, which is why it stopped after a while, right? Like, I wish I still had the knowledge in my head. I don't like drawn blanks, but it absolutely had that vibe. It's funny that it's in universe too, that you would need to know.
Yep.
Numbers.
Yep. And I like knowing some of it, but I don't always remember the numbers and all that stuff. So that was a very fun one. I think we've seen it before, but there's also the helmet collection in Sid's office, Phase 2 clone trooper, white Mandalorian helmet, I believe an advanced recon clone helmet, advanced recon force clone helmet. I can't remember if we talked about it, to be perfectly honest. So why do you think Sid's got helmets?
Great question. Payment. I think, just an interest in collecting, trading, bartering, but now it makes me think of, has, Luthen Rail come by to pick some up for his collection? Nuclea came in. Hey, we were looking for this one here. You got some, Starkiller armor. We'd like that.
Yeah. I like the idea that Sid's been around, for so long. She's like, it's always the things that everybody thinks are so ubiquitous that nobody saves them. And then, it's almost like TV guides today. I don't know how difficult TV guides are to find, but like they were so everywhere and so disposable. And now I'd be like, man, I'd love a TV guide from the week Twin Peaks, premiered, the things that seem most ubiquitous are the things that we don't think to save.
I love that. Yeah, I have that Phantom Menace one. And I not on top of reading the articles about the Phantom Menace, I just went through like the schedule Oh, yeah. I remember this. Yeah. Wheel of Fortune. Yeah.
Oh, so Mr. Belvedere. All right. Cool. Yeah. All right. So other canon stuff for me is there was some of the classic Clone Wars. Let's kind of reuse a line. But I think some people might debate it. So I want to ask you, we've got two company lines. Echo says, Hunter, I think we're about to have some company. And Wrecker later confirms we got company.
Yeah,
at a different part. That can absolutely be seen as just like, yeah, people say that all the time in action movies. I was first introduced to it from Han yelling at Luke. When you hear that line, especially twice in one premiere, two-part premiere, do you feel like that is kind of dipping into the classic Star Wars line? Is it too referential, or for you, it just feels like that's a common thing to say in the galaxy?
Here's how I react to this every time. Because that just, it's just, yeah, that's what you would do. Like, it is, it's, if, as a writer, you know, as your stars, I imagine everyone in that room is a fan, which is okay. Other than Mr. Gilroy in the corner going, I don't own any figures. You have an entire chest in your car. Don't lie. I love it. I love it. It stood out to me. It was funny, and I want more of that. Now, you and I both agree, seasons one and two of the Clone Wars really had fun with that. I don't need that. Mm-hmm. I don't need that every episode. I don't know. You know, I don't, I get that complaint because I had it too. And even Gilroy and Filoni talk about that. Oh yeah, that's when we were having fun being, you know, Star Wars fans. We didn't know how long it would last, you know?
Yeah.
I think the show can grow past, but it's not leaning on it. And therefore it's fun for me.
Yeah, no, exactly. And at this point I just do accept it as like, this is common lingo in the galaxy to say we're about to be attacked.
Yeah. It's not so hyper specific. It's just the beat and the energy that, yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't it be fun? Let's do it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Any other?
It's,
go ahead.
It's like Romar going, it's just, it's a toy. Stop.
It's a common thing to say. It makes you happy.
Because then some people get like, oh, see, they're just so precious with their Star Wars. No, just have some fun, man. Have a coconut smile, man. Like, sit back and relax.
You said half an Eddie Murphy bit there, I hear.
half.
So any other canon moments for you?
I had that one down. I'm glad you mentioned it. Just seeing the SEP tanks and droids again. You and I have traced our relationship with the battle droids, which has gone for me sitting in the theater in 1999 going, oh, no. Oh, no. Did they just say Roger, Roger in a weird voice too? I love that. And now I'm rooting for the droids, the ones who are getting promoted, not rooting for them to win the war and kill Jedi, but just there's a lot of them getting promoted. They don't know what's going on. They got some humor. They're being kicked off ledges. Now you have dead ones sitting there. I just feel sad to see my battle droids. This is where they end up.
Yeah, no, I kind of felt the same way of like that. I thought of it as a B1 battle droid corpse. And I realized, wow, I really have emotions about the battle droids to feel bad for that just collapsed, discarded one. So moving on from canon, was there anything that you disliked or questioned or wrestled with in this episode?
The only thing, yeah, I touched upon it. Sorry, I jumped on you there. I'm hoping that there's more, a little bit explained, fleshed out. I think it's storytelling to come of, other than we're just picking up where we left off. We got to start a second season, kind of set the table. They, with everything they just went through, and I have to admit, I did not I watched the first couple episodes of Bad Batch season one. I did not watch the end, the Kamino stuff, which is some of my favorite stuff in the series. To go through that and kind of end up where they are, I want to know why all of them aren't on the same page going forward. And it's fun and it's conflict. So we got what we need. That's the only thing. I'm hoping for more of those answers. I want a little, I'd love Hunter to say, well, I was listening to Force Center and Joseph brought up great points about where I'm at. Like, I just want to know, you know, I just want to know. It can't just be Echo the entire season, and it's not going to be. I think that's where we're going to get. But I was a little bit like, all right, cool. I got it. Let's do it. Let's push forward. Make the choice. I'm rooting for them to make the choice.
Yeah, I feel like that choice of who do they want to be, what is the future that they can have is like the big question of the show. Almost in the same way that I feel like Din's journey to define what Mandalorian means to him is the question of the show. So we're going to get bits and pieces of that answer, but I don't think like by episode four, they're going to be, you know what? We're rebels, or you know what? We're mercenaries. You know, like it's going to, I think they're going to keep existing in this sort of nebulous space. And I think in some ways these episodes really set it up for like, well, until they can get a big score, they just have to survive until, yeah. And they don't have that long. The other line that was said twice in this episode of Tech saying, the window is closing.
Yeah.
And I feel like the window is closing on, I like that they set up the window is closing on this situation they have set up with Sid. So I do like that it kind of turned up the flame on, you're going to have to choose because you're not going to be able to keep this stasis. And I kind of took it as, you know, they really can't go home again. They watched their home destroyed. Hunter sacrificed himself to save everybody else. They came for Hunter. They're so defined as we're a family. We're together. We're all in on each other. Mm-hmm. But now what? And Hunter just seems happy with that. If we're all in as a family, we'll survive. That's it. We're great.
Yeah. Cross the finish line. Good to go. Let's get some money and run. Yeah.
Yep. I think it's I think the not answer from Hunter about what's next is kind of the answer for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't anything that I particularly struggled with. I think the show does, you know, it's got a slow burn on the big picture storytelling because it kind of wrestles with specific ideas and specific themes or specific character moments in the episode, but it doesn't have its foot on the gas. It's not going to be this one episode and Wrecker is changed, right? It's a slow evolution. So for me, there's nothing really to dislike or question because the show is just so what it says on the tin, right?
Totally.
Yeah. So apologies to anybody who is looking for some grumbles. I'm sure I'll find some in future episodes. But for these, they were just kind of what I expected and what I wanted and enjoyed it. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, we got everything. I really love that we start with the Dooku stuff, really with the Sereno, the legacy of the Clone War, the legacy of those decisions, legacy and the problems of those in power doing things for themselves. I thought it was a great start, as well as being just a real fun start, keeping with the pace and energy of not just last season, but the opening episode of season one. And just the way you can contrast and compare the growth, bright colors, all the stuff, which again doesn't mean that I don't like darker tones in Star Wars or shadowy scenes. I love all of it. I truly do. You want grumbles? There's other places on the internet to go get grumbles about Star Wars. You're not going to get it from me here on this show. It was just fun to be back. I really mean that. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and a lot of great darkness, a lot of great visuals. I love being in a dark forest, you know? Yeah, for me, just a couple things. I really liked the revelation that AZ-3 is not only rescued for Kamino, but now working the bar for Sid was a great place for that character to land so we can enjoy some comedy here and there, but isn't necessarily with a bad batch on every mission.
Yeah. Oh, there's one thing. Oh, you know, there's one big thing I disliked. Yeah. 10 minutes with Gonki? Come on. You got to give me Gonki.
That was my other note. Where is Gonki? Is he safe? Is he all right? Come on. Where was Gonki? Where's the Gonki?
That's great.
Give us our quality Gonki content. And I lied. I do have a couple of the quick things I wanted to mention. I do really like the dedication to using stun bolts. That to me says a ton about who they are of that. I think that's a clear idea about what freedom is this an awareness that maybe some of these clones aren't entirely making this choice. So we got to give them that benefit of the doubt. It's really cool and great for Star Wars. I also just really wanted to shout out Wrecker. I think there are these moments of evolution. He's trying to be stealthier. I loved his pride in making that tank blaster because for somebody who is just like, I'll run in and I'll hit them. And if that doesn't work, I'll hit them harder. Right. Mm-hmm. It showed a lot of creativity and ingenuity, that great classic Star Wars theme of, you know, the organic versus the rigid, being open, being creative, being resourceful. It was great to see Wrecker be the one who kind of supports that classic Star Wars theme in this episode.
Look, this is like when I fix my kitchen sink as opposed to throwing a hammer at it. I get proud.
And you should be. Let's all go through hammers at our problems. It'll be great. If you could have a figure or merch of any character or place from this episode, who or what do you want?
All right, they got these battery-powered Lola droids from Kenobi. Yeah. So we need battery-powered clickety-clack crabs. Scale to the probably the Black Series scale, the 6-inch. So we have those figures out there. So give me some, just go on, imagine the humor of Chihuahuas chasing down clickety-clack crabs on the floor. Just get a 2 AA's, good to go.
Yeah, you got the button to make them clickety-clack, and then you got the button to make them flip you off with their claws.
And then they could you tap them and like pitroids, and they collapse. They protect themselves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That'd be great. Maybe a Roomba version, right? I know you got a Roomba. Do you want a clickety-clackety Roomba?
Yes, and chihuahuas hate those as well. So,
yeah. I feel like Romar's Serenian toy will be at Galaxy's Edge eventually. That is just such a make it in the real world. It's a toy. I am, of course, obsessed with action figures. On the horizon, there is a Hunter 3¾ vintage action figure. The official image of Hunter hasn't been revealed, so I don't know if that's going to be his season one armor or his season two armor. I'm just going to say this on our first episode, so I don't have to say it every episode. I really want Tech Vintage Collection 3¾. The Black Series is great, but now we're now to the point where I want a two-pack of two Techs in his two different armors from the different seasons. So give me a two-pack of Tech.
Two-pack of Tech. I like that.
Yeah. Final one, which I think you'll be on board with, Ken, because I know you like the character, and I think it fits some of your interests. Romar Adell's delivery, Hector Elizondo's delivery, was so great, so calming, such a balm compared to the chaos and horror of the rest of the episode, that I really want Romar Adell telling classic Serenian stories of old real quietly on like an ASMR tape.
I love this idea. Absolutely. Absolutely. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Whisper of Sereno. I would love it. All right, that is our look at the 2-episode premiere of Bad Batch Season 2. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, if you're looking to connect with us here, join the team. You know, you can find us on Twitter at 4CenterPod. We are on Hive Social if you're over there at 4Center. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. We're trying to reach 7,000 subscribers as we build out our YouTube channel in 2023. New show, Figure Fights, coming in February. Subscribe over there. We're on Facebook as well at 4Center Podcast. You can get the podcast anywhere. Just search and find us, but Acast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/4Center. Support us directly at patreon.com/4Center. Follow me at Ken Napsok, or go to my website, kennapsok.com, for more. Next week, dropping a new podcast on my podcast feed called The Blathering. Check it out over there on the Napsok Network, wherever podcasts are podcasted. You, sir, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. I am on Hive. I'm on Mastodon, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all under at Joseph Scrimshaw. So just search there. You can also check out my website and my YouTube page. New videos coming soon on YouTube. That is also findable by just searching Joseph Scrimshaw on the old internet. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for unidentified crab creatures, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.